good evening to all those that can make it out this evening. For tonight's creation slide, I chose to do something a little bit different than what I normally do. Normally, I just take a picture off of NASA's image of the day, and I use that as my picture, but tonight I wanted to do something a little different, something that is a little more in the holiday spirit. So, for tonight's creation slide, I chose... Tonight's creation slide is about the Northern Lights. And so I have always thought the Northern Lights are very pretty. They're very beautiful to look at, but there are some things about the Northern Lights that I didn't know whenever I started researching them. So I looked up some facts about the Northern Lights. And according to an article I found, the Northern Lights occur when gas particles in the Earth's atmosphere collide with charged particles from the Sun's atmosphere. The electrons and protons travel millions of miles from the Sun to the Earth on a solar wind. So that's how the Northern Lights occur. And it also mentioned that if you were to go to a place where you can view the Northern Lights, obviously in San Angelo, Texas, there is no Northern Lights, but if you were to go to Alaska, you would not see the Northern Lights as you see them in this picture. The naked eye is not able to pick up all the different colors and the arrays that are shown in the image behind me. But if you were to want to see the Northern Lights like this, it said you would need to bring a long exposure camera, and that would give you a better opportunity to see the Northern Lights in their full experience. Also, according to the article, you can view the Northern Lights in several different spots around the world. The most popular spot to view them is actually in Scandinavia. But you can also view them in Canada, Iceland, Scotland, Russia, and Alaska. And again, sadly, no San Angelo, Texas. But one of the most interesting things to me whenever I was researching the Northern Lights is not only have they been seen and observed by hundreds and hundreds of different civilizations throughout the years, but they also have many different meanings to different cultures. This article that I found said that people have been observing the Northern Lights as far back as 1619, and they've had many stories linked to them. The Inuit tribe believed that the lights were spirits of their ancestors, playing a game with a walrus skull used as the ball. While according to Finnish folklore, a mystical Arctic fox is running in the north and touching the mountains with its fur, causing sparks to fly off into the sky. So I just thought that was pretty cool that there's Northern Lights have been around for a while. They've been viewed by many different civilizations and been viewed for hundreds of years, and they all have their kind of different meanings to different people. And I found this other picture. So this picture, it's a lot of kind of purple and blue. And this one, I thought was really cool because it's all green. And so I think it's a beautiful sight to see. And it's something that I think would be awesome if you could get to go see one day. So moving on to our lesson. For our lesson tonight, I just have a simple story lesson. I wanted to try to connect lesson to something going on in the world today. And it made me think of one of my favorite movies that I've seen, and I'll kind of spare you the details of the movie. In the movie, basically there's a mall, and there's a group of bad people that they just have the evil intention that they want to go in and steal a whole bunch of money from this mall. And so the way they do it is they infiltrate the mall. They all get hired for different positions throughout the mall, and they have this big, long, thought-out plan, and the plan was to steal a whole bunch of money from this mall. And by the end of the movie, it doesn't work out well for any of the people that were a part of that evil plan. And so I think there's a wonderful story in the Bible about two people that had a very thought-out plan. They had to go through lots of steps to steal something that they wanted, but at the end of the day, it did not work out very well for either of them. And that is the story of Naboth and his stolen vineyard. But before we go any further, we have the opportunity to go to God in a word of prayer. Our story of Naboth and his vineyard mostly takes place in 1 Kings chapter 21. And so for a little bit of background information, we will just start at verse 1 and read what is going on in this little situation, this conflict between the two stories, two sides. So, verse 1 reads, "And it came to pass, after all these things, that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, next to the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. So Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, Give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is near, next to my house. And for it I will give you a vineyard better than it. Or, if it seems good to you, I will give you its worth in money. But Naboth said to Ahab, The Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to you. So Ahab went into his house sullen and displeased, because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers. And he lay down on his bed, turned away his face, and would eat no food. So Naboth owned a vineyard that had been in his family for a long, long time, as it said, it was his father's inheritance. As King Ahab saw the, I'm sure it was a wonderful vineyard, the close proximity that it was to the house, he wanted the vineyard. He wanted to buy it or trade it, something for that vineyard. So he made Naboth two offers. I'll buy it from you, or if you choose this one, I'll give you a vineyard just as equal or better to the one you already have, whichever you choose. And to both of these offers, Naboth refused. Now, typically in the business world, this next part of the transaction would be what we call a counteroffer. King Ahab went to Naboth with his original offer. Naboth refused the offer. And so now this next part would be where King Ahab makes his counteroffer. Well, if you won't accept my original offer, how about I pay you double what I was going to pay you really? Or how about I give you a better vineyard and I give you a little sum of money on the side as well? Anything, if he really wanted this vineyard, anything that he could do to try to spike his interest in selling his vineyard. But that's not what he does. King Ahab then goes home and is said he's very sad, he's displeased, and he kind of starts to pout. It says he turns away his face and he wouldn't eat. He was so upset, he would not eat food. He sounds kind of childish to me. But picking up in verse 5 in our story, we are introduced to our second evil partner in this story, his wife Jezebel. So verse 5 reads, But Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said, Why is your spirit so sullen that you eat no food? He said to her, Because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite and said to him, Give me your vineyard for money, or else if it pleases you, I will give you another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give you my vineyard. Then Jezebel, his wife, said to him, You now exercise authority over Israel. Arise, eat food, and let your heart be cheerful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. Don't you worry, sweetheart. I know this man, Naboth, he's being mean to you. He turned you down. He wouldn't accept your offers. But just don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Eat your food, and I'll be okay. I'll take care of it. And so, Jezebel does, in fact, take care of it. But she does it in a very evil way that was not very pleasing to the sight of God. What she does is she decides she wants to make up a false story about Naboth that puts him very much in the wrong, and it ends up getting him into a lot of trouble and getting him killed. In verse 8, Jezebel tells two of her men, and she wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who were dwelling in the city with Naboth. She wrote in the letters saying, Proclaim a fast, and seat Naboth with high honor among the people, and see two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, You have blasphemed God and the king. Then take him out, stone him, and that he may die. So Jezebel very plainly lied. She made a false accusation, wrote it out in order that she wanted a false accusation about Naboth to be proclaimed, so that he would have to get drug out of the city, stoned, and he would get killed. And that's exactly what happened. But we all know how God feels about liars. He hates them. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16, starting in verse 16, it tells us how God feels about people who lie and people who are deceitful. Proverbs 6, starting in verse 16. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift to running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. Now, several of those can just perfectly describe Jezebel in this situation. Heart that devises wicked plans. It's pretty wicked to make a false accusation about a man just you can steal his vineyard. Hands that shed innocent blood. Naboth did nothing wrong. He didn't want to sell his vineyard, so he turned down the offer. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a part of business transactions. Not all transactions go the way you like them to. He was innocent, yet his blood was shed because of this lie that Jezebel made. He had a lying tongue. A false witness who speaks lies. All of these perfectly describe Jezebel in this situation. And all of these things hated and seem evil in the sight of the Lord. And so the Lord does not take these things very lightly. Skipping down a couple chapters to Proverbs chapter 19. Proverbs 19 verse 9 tells us that a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who speaks lies shall perish. Now, I think we can continue on in our story, and we will see how this lie affected both King Ahab and his wife Jezebel. So, after receiving the order from Jezebel, the men, as they were told, called a fast, announced the false accusations about Naboth. It took him out of the city, and picking up in our story back again, Kings, verse 13 reads, "And the two men, scoundrels, came in and sat before him. And the scoundrels witnessed against him, against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth has blasphemed God and the king. And they took him outside the city, stoned him with stones, so that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth has been stoned and is dead." So after hearing the news that Naboth was dead, Jezebel then decides to go to her husband, King Ahab, and she told him the news. "Sweetie, you remember that vineyard that you wanted, or a vineyard that the mean man so rudely declined you? Well, now it's yours if you want it. It's yours for the taking. That man who turned down your offer, you know, he was taken care of. You don't have to worry about him anymore." And so, verse 16 in our story, it's exactly what King Ahab does. "So it was, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab got up and went to take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite." Now that Jezebel had taken care of Naboth, King Ahab got up and he went down to take his new vineyard that he had so desperately wanted all this time. And so, what King Ahab and Jezebel did was an evil thing. They lied about Naboth. They got an innocent man killed. They spread false accusations about him, all so that they could steal his possession, all that because they were lustful and wanted something that wasn't theirs. And this was obviously not very pleasing to God. And he handled both King Ahab and Jezebel for their actions. Later on in the book of 1 Kings, as we know, King Ahab is eventually killed in battle, having disguised himself as a regular soldier and not the king. He goes into battle and he is shot by a random arrow, and as he is shot, he tells the person driving his chariot, "You know, get me out of here. I'm shot. Get me away from this battle." And he ends up dying. And so, in the chariot, as they're getting rid of his body, washing the blood away, it said the dogs came and licked up his blood out of the streets. So he was faced with a very violent death. War, death in war is never pretty, but I feel Jezebel was probably faced with an even more violent death. In 2 Kings chapter 9, we read of Jezebel's death and how her part in the story came to a pretty violent end. And so I have, starting in verse 30, I have the whole rest of that little section, and I just want to read straight through it. So starting in in 2 Kings chapter 9, starting in verse 30, the Bible reads, "Now when Jehu came to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she put paint on her eyes and adorned her head, and looked through a window. Then, as Jehu entered the gate, she said, 'Is it peace, Zimri, murderer of your master?' And he looked up at the window and said, 'Who is on my side? Who?' So two or three eunuchs looked out at him. Then he said, 'Throw her down.' So they threw her down, and some of her blood splattered on the wall and on the horses, and he trampled her underfoot. And when he had gone in, he ate and drank. Then he said, 'Go now. See to this accursed woman and bury her, for she was the king's daughter.' So they went to bury her. But they found no more than her than the skull feet and the palms of her hands. Therefore they came back to him and told him, and he said, "This is the word of the Lord, which he spoke by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, On the plot of ground at Jezreel, dogs shall eat at the flesh of Jezebel, and the corpse of Jezebel shall be as refuse on the surface of the field, in the plot of Jezreel, so that they shall not say, Here lies Jezebel." And this was a very, very violent end for Jezebel, as she was, you know, thrown down, trampled over, and then said that nothing was left of her but her skull and the palms of her feet. The Bible stated previously that the dogs would lap up King Ahab's blood, which they did. And then Elijah prophesied that the dogs shall eat the flesh of Jezebel, which they did. Also that no one could say, "Here lies Jezebel," because there was no more Jezebel. She was eaten by the dogs, and which is a pretty, very, very violent way to go. In all of this, the violent acts that happened towards King Ahab and the violent acts that happened towards Jezebel, all were because of the evil thing they did to Naboth. They killed an innocent man. They took his own vineyard. They just did a very evil act, and that was not very pleasing in God's eyes, and they were punished for their evil act. And I think it's pretty obvious to know that God does not like liars. He does not like people who steal. He does not like people who shed innocent blood. All things King Ahab and Jezebel did to Naboth. And so I think Proverbs chapter 21, verse 6, it's a real short verse, but it pretty much sums up this story perfectly. Proverbs 21, Proverbs 21, verse 6, "Getting treasures by a lying tongue is the fleeting fantasy of those who seek death." Jezebel and King Ahab, they were seeking a treasure. The treasure was Naboth's vineyard, and they got it by a lying tongue, and so they were seeking death. And that's a perfect way to describe this story. So, moral of the story, don't be like Jezebel and King Ahab. They were evil, they did an evil act, and they were punished for this evil act. And they were not looked down upon pleasantly by God. We try to stay away from what they did and not do what they did, I think we'll be okay. Anyways, that's all I have for this evening. It wasn't a very long lesson, but I think it's a good story in the Bible. It's got a good message to it. And, well, hopefully something I said was beneficial, but now we can stand and sing the song of invitation.